It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto has estimated that the city faces a $100 million budget deficit this year as a result of the pandemic, the recession, and lost tax revenue. But how is Allegheny County doing? County Executive Rich Fitzgerald joins us. Is the county running a deficit? What's the financial situation for the county?
Well, it's been pretty stable, and I really want to credit the county manager and the budget team and my chief of staff. They've literally monitored this from the very beginning of this pandemic. We put in a hiring freeze that kept things relatively stable. You know, our property tax collections have been, you know, relatively fairly good. We've certainly seen some drop off in things like our port alcohol tax, our car rental tax, the hotel tax. These type of the gaming casino tax, these type of things have obviously been affected. So there will be, a shortfall in some of these areas. But hopefully on the expenditure side, we're able to offset that a little bit. So we're going through our budget process right now for the budget that I will be presenting to council in October. And we'll just see where it goes.
Is your better financial picture than the city's? Is that because the major source of the county's revenue is property taxes and not wage taxes?
There's probably something to be said for that. You know, municipal governments are dependent on wage tax to a large degree. Also, things like amusement tax, parking tax, those things have all been affected, just like our port alcohol and car rental taxes and hotel taxes have been affected. They don't take up the significant percentage of our budget that property tax does. So for counties, it's probably a more stable outcome. The downfall is in the good years. Counties are not able to have kind of more like windfalls or surpluses that they can run to put into a rainy day fund for times such as this. So it's all a balance in how these revenues go about. But again, our budget department and the county manager have been very vigilant in monitoring these finances throughout this pandemic, being able to try to forecast where we need to be and taking, you know, the appropriate steps.
Property tax payments are usually due spring and summer. So have you seen a decline or a delay in payment? Because even if people's, you don't rely on wage tax, if people have lost their jobs, it might hurt their ability to pay their property taxes.
Yeah, well, one of the things we did early on was give an extension and move back the due date, which I think helped a lot of people. And you know, while it's not maybe exactly what it is in other years, it's been fairly close. And so far, I think we've been able to weather that part of the budget.
So normally at this time, you would be well into that process of drawing up a new budget. So is it a more arduous process this time around for the 2021 calendar year?
It is. It is, you know, the way the county works on our fiscal year. I present the budget to council in October. Council holds its, goes through their process, holds hearings in November. And then the budget gets voted on in early December for the following year. So, you know, as we go through that process, certainly it will be more challenging this year. And the other, you know, tough part is going to be forecasting. You know, if we do see a vaccine in the early part of next year and say the second quarter, the way the CDC has indicated that we may see second, third quarter of next year, will we see a more of a normalization of some of those other revenues, the hotel tax revenues, the port alcohol revenues, the car rental revenues, gaming revenues, et cetera. So trying to make that forecast is going to be challenging for all of us this year, whether you're doing the federal budget, the state budget, the county budget, or municipal budgets. It's something we're going to have to be adjusting on. The one good thing in the county is, you know, over these last few years, we've built up a rainy day fund. And obviously right now, fiscally, it's raining very, very hard. I mean, that's for these difficult times, you build up a rainy day fund. When I come into office, it was around $5 million. We built it up to over $50 million. So we'll hopefully be able to use some of that to offset some of the revenue shortfalls that come with the pandemic.
Have you had to tap that so far during these last few months?
I don't think we have just yet, but we'll just have to see. And as the budget department, you know, makes their report, we'll certainly be monitoring that closely.
You mentioned a hiring freeze earlier. As you look forward to 2021, are layoffs a possibility?
As of now, I don't think we're going to have to do that. You never know where things ultimately will go, but I think that's one of the things. I think the county manager and the budget department have really done a good job. We haven't had to have layoffs here in 2020. Hopefully, again, if the medical experts are right and we do see a vaccine at some point next year and we do start to get into a more normal economic operation, that we can forestall anything like layoffs. I think it's, you know, the county employees I know have been very grateful. I've heard this again and again, that they have had a steady paycheck, that they have been able to go to work. And we want to continue that. We want to continue that stability that we've been able to bring to the county budgetary operations and operations in general over these last number of years.
Property tax hikes have been rare in recent years in the county. Is that under consideration?
Well, I'm proud of the fact that we've only had one property tax millage increase in the last 19 years. So 18 out of 19 years, the level has remained flat. And when it really comes to inflation, it's actually a little bit of a decrease, because your spending power, obviously decreases every year. My sense is we won't have to do a millage increase next year, and I hope not to have to, you know, go to council with that. But again, you just never know till we go through this whole process and we go through the budgetary numbers and the budget department and the county manager come and present that to me, and then we put this plan together to present the council.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you later.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. 6 weeks before a presidential election, and usually political parties, as well as nonpartisan voters' rights organizations, would be in high gear in their voter outreach efforts. But how do they reach voters during a pandemic? Judy Clack is Voter Services Chair for the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh. Welcome to the program, Judy.
Thanks for inviting me.
Judy, we hear a lot of people saying voter outreach, but what does it specifically entail in this region in these days?
Well, it is completely different for the League of Women Voters. Normally, we were doing in-person voter registration efforts. For example, from mid-March to June 30th, we had to cancel 37 unique voter registration events at colleges, high schools, naturalization ceremonies. And so in July, we gathered the Voter Service Committee and we set up or expanded 7 committees to do outreach when we cannot be in person.
These committees, they're trying to reach, I'm going to say different voter groups, but different segments of our population. Who were you trying to reach through these committees?
The first one was we're calling it the Food Bank Committee, but we learned it's the Food Pantry Committee. There are 158 food pantries associated with the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, and they were willing to put a voter registration form and one piece of League of Women Voters literature in every bag or basket going to every family in the month of September. We, along with the Junior League of Pittsburgh, took this on as a double task. So the three of our nonpartisan organizations, Food Bank, Junior League, and League of Women Voters, have successfully finished preparing materials to go to 20,000 families in Allegheny County.
And you're also trying to reach students as well, like you normally do, as well as senior citizens.
Senior citizens was a huge new effort for us. Typically, we are invited to several senior high-rise buildings, senior subsidized housing buildings, and we go there and we register voters or help them change address. But this time, we are reaching over 200 subsidized senior housing buildings in Allegheny County. Some will just post our materials near on their bulletin board and near their elevators. Others are willing to give each resident a copy. We are not allowed in the buildings. We cannot distribute the things there. We cannot even copy them and bring them there because they could have COVID on them.
According to Pennsylvania's Department of State Division of Voter Registration, in April of 2016, total voter registration in Allegheny County was about 876,000. As of September 7th of this year, Allegheny County has about 908,000 total registered voters. What do you think caused this roughly 30,000 increase in registration?
I would like to think that the League of Women Voters encouraging everyone to register and everyone to vote may have had something to do with it. Also, this is just a hotly contested election, and I think people in both political parties are out there also encouraging their constituents to register and to vote.
So we might have more registered voters, but how are you getting them to follow through whoever they choose to be their representatives, their officials?
The League of Women Voters does not collect contact information on the people that we are helping register to vote. If we did, we could send text messages or email reminders, and there are some organizations that do that. So we just hope with all our outreach through colleges, and we have another religious institutions committee that is reaching out to the churches, synagogues, mosques, for them, sending them multiple different types of PDFs of documents they can share with their congregations, that hopefully just by continually reminding many groups that they will follow up and vote on November 3rd.
In every election, the League of Women Voters is always one of the lead sponsors, coordinators of candidate forums and debates. Can you still hold these events where voters get a chance to learn more about candidates?
Yes, we figured out how to do it, but we were brought kicking and screaming. Many of us are over 70 years old and did not know the technology. We had to figure out how to do it, and we chose Zoom. This worked great. We had just the two candidates and the moderator and a timing device on the screen, all separately. We got 800 to 2,900 views of our primary forums on our Facebook page. So we are going to continue doing them all remotely.
Judy Clack is the Voter Services Chair for the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh. Judy, thanks so much.
Thank you for asking.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. COVID-19 hit the hotel industry hard. Experts say it may not return to pre-pandemic strength until 2023. In Pennsylvania, the hospitality field has shed the most jobs of any industry, with tens of thousands still out of work. Keystone Crossroads' Laura Benshoff reports that disruption is both an immediate hardship and a long-term one, as some workers contemplate having to start over unexpectedly.
52-year-old Stephanie Swain has had the same job pretty much her whole adult life, a cook at the Warwick Hotel in Center City, Philadelphia.
I actually started in 1985 right out of high school. And then I left because I had a baby, and then I went back in 89, and I've been there ever since.
Due to the coronavirus, she lost that job in March when the hotel shut down its kitchen. So instead of getting up every morning at 3:30 a.m. for the breakfast shift, Swain is home and helping take care of her three grandchildren.
Hi.
Hello. What's your name? She said, what's your name?
Otto.
They're spread around the living room, each with a laptop tuned in to their virtual classroom.
What's your name?
Melody, that's a nice name.
After nearly 6 months on unemployment and accepting food donations from a neighbor, Swain's worried that her nearly $19 an hour job, which she worked towards for 30 years, might be gone for good.
To go somewhere new and might have to start at minimum wage, like, I really wouldn't be able to pay my bills then. That's just so crazy to think about starting over somewhere else.
The hotel industry is far away from full recovery. Pennsylvania is still down around 160,000 hospitality jobs compared to pre-pandemic times. Nationally, hotels are hovering at around 50% occupancy. In urban areas such as Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, it's even lower.
We're still at about 30-40%.
That's Ed Groves, executive director of the Greater Philadelphia Hotel Association.
The folks that are bearing the brunt of this are our frontline staff, our hourly employees. I'm also very concerned that the longer that this goes on, we're going to have trouble getting some of those people back.
And they definitely won't come back if their jobs cease to exist. One hotel in the Philadelphia area has already converted to apartments, and nearly 20 others are behind on their loans, which could spell more closures. Hotel lobbyists asked the federal government for a $150 billion bailout earlier in the pandemic, but they didn't get it. At the local level, workers say they want a guarantee that if their old jobs do return, they'll get first dibs on going back to them. Dermot DeLue-Dix, a research analyst with the union Unite Here, says the majority of their members are older and Black or Latino, groups also hard hit by COVID-19.
And so that's a group of workers who generally find it really difficult to find a job, you know, and face racial discrimination and age discrimination in hiring.
Some hotels have extended a right for workers to return to their jobs, doing so voluntarily or through union negotiations. In Philly, Unite Here is pushing for a law similar to ones now on the books in California that would guarantee that right to all hospitality workers. So far, no Pennsylvania cities have taken it up. Even workers whose employers say they will take them back describe feelings of seemingly endless uncertainty. Lakeisha Wheelings worked for 14 years in the kitchen at the Marriott attached to the Pennsylvania Convention Center. It's been closed since the start of the pandemic, and she says management keeps shifting back the date when it will reopen.
So I don't know what this means. Like, I'm terrified. Like, I don't even know if a lot of us will even be called back.
She recently got a letter saying now it would be December 31st. In that same letter, Marriott said it might have to make some layoffs permanent. With so much up in the air, Wheeling says if she doesn't go back to work soon, she'll need to find something to do.
I don't know. I would definitely have to start looking for something else. But like I said, it took me 14 years to get to $20 an hour. And it would probably be hard, you know, finding a job to start at that level.
She just doesn't want to give up on a career and financial stability that she's earned until she absolutely has to. Laura Benchoff, Keystone Crossroads.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.